Welcome to Sharkpedia. We're your hosts, Megan
and Imani,
a couple of shark researchers that want to bring the science to you.
We're creating a space to learn all things sharks
and their relatives,
answer your questions,
and learn from the legends in the field.
Get ready to jump in.
Let's dive deep into the world of sharks.
Hi, Imani.
Hi, Megan. Nice to see you.
It's so good to see your face again. I like it less over a computer screen than in person, but
yeah,
this will do.
I mean, considering we went 4 years without in person, I'd say that was quite a treat.
It was. Actually, I like didn't fully register that I hadn't seen you in person in 4 years until you said that when I was with you in person. I was like, oh my gosh, it's been so long.
I like you. The last time I saw you in person, I just finished my freshman year of college.
Oh my gosh, that made my
which is so weird.
That just made my brain implode. And now you just moved for your PhD. How's that going? How was the move? How's the classes
grad
going?
Grad school's crazy. In like a
yes,
it's weird because since I'm in my first semester, like I am doing some research. I'm going to present at SIGB in January, which I'm super excited about because first scientific conference.
Oh my gosh, I'm so happy for you.
But it's weird because I have classes. I have three classes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird taking them, but also TAing and doing research and writing grants. And it's so different from undergrad because I just finished undergrad like a year ago.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a sharp turnaround for sure.
Yeah, I'm happy it took a year, though, even if it was a COVID year, which arguably wasn't really a year off because we were all just
scrambling,
stressed out the whole time anyway.
Oh, my God.
But it was a year from schoolwork, which was nice. And I do like my classes that I'm taking in comparison to undergrad, where, like, you have to take core classes that aren't up your alley and you have to take them to give the university money.
Yep.
And it's not as enjoyable, whereas I really like these classes.
Listen, grad school is so much better. If somebody had told me how much better grad school was than undergrad, I probably would have done grad school sooner.
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, I've literally been a grad student for 2 weeks now, so.
No, you were made for this. I feel like you're super ready. And you're right. Like, the classes are super interesting. They're actually applicable to what you want to do. Like, it's just better.
Yeah, we're one of the classes that they make students take. The title doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but it's called Critical Thinking for the Life Sciences. And basically this guy just like made the class whatever he wanted it to be, but he kind of made it so that it was actually useful to you. So you write papers and present them and he critiques you, and you write summary papers of other people's papers, and then you do a lit review, and then your final paper is a grant proposal.
That's the best.
He, like, critiques all of your presentations and all of your papers, which I'm sure he's just going to rip me to shreds when I turn my paper in on Wednesday. But it'll at least be useful as opposed to some of my undergrad classes.
Yeah. I think I've had a couple classes now where I actually drafted a grant proposal. And I'm just like, this is so much more useful. And then I had, like, my classmates peer edit it. And then my instructor did. And it's like, I had more feedback on this grant proposal in this class than I ever have outside of this class. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And it's honestly super refreshing and nice to know that the classes that I'm taking will actually be useful.
Yeah.
Rather than other things that I took that I probably won't ever use or think about ever again.
Yes. This is like such hard facts. How was the move? I mean, you had like also a quick turnaround on that, right? You like went straight from field school to just like moving to grad school.
Yeah. I got home, right? I got home at night, and then I had 3 days to pack all of my stuff and then move.
Immediately
the move was like a 2-hour drive, so it wasn't terrible. Not as terrible as moving across the country for my undergrad, but I still had to pack in 3 days, which was kind of a lot.
I mean, even moving across town is like that is a chore. It's a thing. So I mean, like,
yeah, it was really tiring. And you end up with, like, we all, when people move, end up with the miscellaneous box, which is just, like, stuff that you have that doesn't belong in any other boxes.
Yep.
And there's just random things in there that you just don't know where to put them, and it's the end of moving, and you just throw them all in there and say that you'll deal with, like, that Bermuda rectangle of a box later, and that box is currently sitting in my closet. I have not touched it. I'm afraid to look at it.
Oh, my gosh. I don't blame you at all. Just do that when you're like, I can't write any more grant things. And then somehow the Bermuda box will just seem that much less like a task. Because it's not a grant you have to write.
It's just going to sit there building up dust in my closet corner. Mm-hmm. I'm sure people can relate to that.
100%. We just moved, like, only the second time since we've been in San Francisco. But we finally are just like, why are we holding on to so much stuff that has been in a box forever? And we finally just started, like, purging so much. Like, especially in San Francisco, we don't have room to, like, keep things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I have learned to be not sentimental at all. I'm just like, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not going to use this. I need this to go.
You have to learn to be not sentimental. Yeah. It's true. When one of my moms moved right after my freshman year of college, I had to go through my room and get rid of stuff or take it. Like, it wasn't like she was going to hold it for me. She moved to New York City. She has less space than I probably have. And I was going through things. And I was like, well, what if I want to look at this? What if I want to use this randomly at one point? And then in the back of my mind, I kept saying, Imani, you're not ever going to use that. Get rid of it.
Yeah, that's good advice. I would just get rid of it.
Just get rid of it, and then you forget about it. I don't even remember what the things were that I got rid of.
I don't think I've ever really gotten rid of too much stuff and then looked back and been like, I wish I didn't get rid of that.
Yeah. If it's, like, a truly sentimental thing, then obviously keep it. But if it's, like, one shirt that you bought and wore one time and keep telling yourself that you'll wear it to that one random occasion when you never do, just get rid of it.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So moving was really fun. It was super stressful. Grad school is really fun, also pretty stressful, even though I'm only 2 weeks in. But I think the thing that we really need to talk about is what we started with at the beginning, about how we haven't seen each other in 4 years and got to see each other in August, and all of the really fun things that we got to do during that week that we were together.
I don't even think that we even told the Sharkies I was going, because I feel like also, I didn't feel real that I was going until I was literally, like, put 2 feet on the vessel, the Garvin, which is the research vessel for the field school. So I don't think we said anything, but yeah, I got to go to the field school where Imani was a fellow, right? You were a fellow with the field school. Let's maybe start really quick with that background information. Like, what was your position there? And then we'll talk about how I got tied in and why I was there, because that also probably seems random.
Yeah. So if any of you Sharkies have ever heard me talk about my path into shark research, then you've absolutely heard me talk about field school. If you follow me on Twitter, those are all the shark photos that you see ever. So field school is a company down in Miami. They're run by some amazing people. And I met them for the first time in spring 2019. I won a scholarship to go do their Intro to Shark Research Skills course. And I kind of just kept going back because I really love shark research. And at the beginning of 2020, before everything went crazy, they asked me if I wanted to do a fellowship with them for a year while I kind of figured my life out, figured out if I wanted to go to grad school, figured out if I wanted to just start in the industry. And of course I said yes, because I love them and they're amazing. And also I got to be around sharks. And so I spent this last summer helping to teach that course, which was really awesome because I got to see my own kind of skill progression from when I first took the course to being able to teach it to students and help them with things. And I just, like, got to watch myself grow, which was really nice, and definitely gave me some, like, good feelings the whole summer. And Megan got to come out and go on the boat with us for the last course of the summer, which was, it was so cool.
And actually, before I like to say why I was there, it was also super cool because the 4 years ago, when we last time we saw each other in person, you were my volunteer. And then this time I was in the student position and you were the one teaching me. And honestly, that was like so cool and so fun. And I kept saying this quote from The Office where I was like, my, have the turntables. Because one...
The whole week.
I said that a lot. I also put it in the guest book.
Amazing.
But yeah, it just was like really cool to learn from you. And you're a great teacher. And it was just like really cool
to see you.
Because it was so clear how much you've learned and how much I could learn from you. And that was like really exciting.
You're going to make me blush. I'm already blushing.
It's okay.
Blushing.
I'm blushing too.
Yeah, it was so much fun. And it also, yeah, it was so funny because you were in the teacher role and I was in the student role the last time that we were in person together. And then the roles were switched around and it was so much fun to just like be on the boat with you and talk to you all the time and get to do fun
things with
you.
And do research and learn. Oh gosh, it was so cool. Okay, so I should probably explain why I was there. So, Dr. Catherine McDonald is the director of the field school. We also interviewed her a while back, actually, like pretty early on into the podcast. So if you haven't listened to that, you should definitely listen. Dr. Catherine McDonald is an incredible researcher and mentor and someone that we both, Amani and I, have both learned from quite a bit. I had actually reached out to Dr. McDonald because she's a field ecologist. I actually had somewhat of a connection because of Amani, really, but I had read a lot of her research and just had some general questions about shark ecology, and she was incredibly kind to entertain those questions, and we just never stopped talking. We kept talking back and forth. I ended up on a lot of Zoom calls with her and Jake Jerome, who is another one of the field school founders, and they have taught me so much because when I'm at my institution for my research, for my dissertation, I'm kind of by myself. I don't have a lot of other shark researchers around. So I have felt a bit isolated, which is actually not that entirely uncommon. So if you go to grad school and you don't have someone that knows exactly what you're doing, I definitely encourage you to reach out to other people. The worst case scenario is that they're going to say no, but most kind people will say, absolutely, let me answer your questions. And that's what Dr. McDonald did for me. She answered a lot of my questions and we just didn't stop talking. And eventually she offered actually to be one of my committee members, which I was super honored to have her on. And so she is one of my committee members for my PhD. And I started calling her and Jake so much, asking so many questions. Actually, there's a couple times I called Jake when I was in the field and I was like, Jake, I'm having this problem with this blood draw. Is this normal? And he would just answer all my questions. And finally, Dr. McDonald said, you know, why don't you just come and learn firsthand with all of us and like be with other shark ecologists and get some of that hands-on experience and learn with other ecologists so that you can go back feeling really equipped. So I'm actually going to bring up one of our listener questions. We posted on Instagram and on Twitter earlier today, and one of our listener questions was really good and is applicable to what I'm about to say. The first question is from Man Crush Maya, who is actually one of the students on the vessel with us when we were at field school. And she asked, Megan, have you been applying your field school skills in your own research? And so, yes, I absolutely have. And that's why I was there. In my dissertation work, I'm taking muscle biopsies that are allowing me to do stable isotope analysis. And that stable isotope analysis is going to tell us a lot of information, but primarily their diet shifts from the time when they're a pup, when they're first born, and then as they start to grow into those sexually mature adults, because San Francisco Bay is the only place in the entire world where we have been able to find every age stage. So I'm getting really cool access to really see the entire shift from pup all the way to adult. So I'm learning how to do stable isotope analysis, and I've been working on taking muscle biopsies, but one of the things that I learned at field school was kind of a different way to take a muscle biopsy is with the biopsy punch. Seven Gill's skin is like actually really thick, and so I was having a really hard time with muscle biopsy punches, but with the field school staff, I was able to learn some different ways to apply the punch, which might be really helpful, especially for some of the pups that have thinner skin. I think I want to go back to those punches. I had tried a different technique, especially with the larger adults. I actually have these like biopsy forceps that are used in like human surgeries. If you want to like go in for a human surgery and take a biopsy of like a kidney or something, which is like, or like a tumor or whatever, there's biopsy forceps. That's what I use for a lot of the larger adults. I make a small incision in their skin, and that biopsy forcep is really like thin, and it allows me to go through the incision and get a really good muscle biopsy, which works really well for the really large adults that have their skin is like, I'm not even kidding, like an inch thick. Those punches would not work on that.
Whoa.
Yeah, but it was still really helpful to see that. And then I got to practice blood draws with Jake Jerome, who is the physiologist for field school. And he has taught me how to do the blood draws via Zoom. And finally getting able to do that with him next to me is like totally different. And I feel like I went in and like knew how to do it, but I left field school feeling 1,000 times more confident in how I was doing it.
It was so much fun to watch you draw blood. I was, like, so hyped every single time. I was like, heck yeah, Megan!
Should we tell them one of the sharks I drew blood from?
Yes, tell them.
I got to draw blood from an adult bull shark, and that was really awesome.
You got to draw blood from an adult bull shark that I landed.
Yeah, you did!
Which was even cooler!
Wait, you should tell them what that means. What does it mean to land a bull shark?
Okay, so over this whole fellowship over the summer, I was slowly progressing in my skills with shark handling and any sort of workup techniques. So I kind of went from not really restraining head or not really restraining mid to learning how to do that and getting really good at it. So at the end of the summer, there was this like whole skill progression of where it started out at the beginning of the year versus the end. And one of the skills that I got to learn towards the end, and I can't wait to continue learning, is how to land a shark. So when I say land, basically on the back of research vessel Garvin, there is a platform that falls off the back of the boat and it sits about maybe half an inch underwater, usually right at water level. And when we're fishing, especially for larger sharks, we're using drum lines. So with drum lines, you use what's called a yo-yo. And if you think about it in your head, it's exactly what a yo-yo looks like. The technical term for it is a cube and reel. But yo-yo really kind of gives you a good image in your head where there's two sides and there's line in the middle of it. And that is what you use to reel a shark in. So there's 100 feet of it and you have this giant yo-yo in your hand and you're pulling the line in up over the yo-yo and the shark's pulling against you. And the purpose of having this tool is so that it can take the bulk of the tension from the shark so that you can pull the shark, right? Your weight is what's pulling the shark in. But when they're pulling away from you, you don't have this super small fishing line in your hand. You have this very large yo-yo that has the fishing line in the middle and makes it a lot easier and safer for you to haul the shark in. Now, I'd only landed one other shark before this, and it was a nurse shark, and nurse sharks have a tendency to kind of come up dead weight, and like they'll just sit in the water column like full weight to the floor, and you'll pull them in, and then they'll start kind of swimming around. And bull sharks have a tendency to swim towards you, but then do these like kind of quick turns and like bursts of speed in one direction. And I was really excited that they'd let me like try to reel this bull shark in, and I did it. And I was like, oh my goodness, I just reeled in a bull shark. I don't even remember the length of that bull shark. I think it was like at least 8 feet.
Yeah, it was pretty big. I don't remember either, but I think 8 feet sounds pretty accurate.
Yeah, I want to say it was at least 8 feet. And for reference, I'm 5'3", so taller than me.
I'm 5'2".
And yeah. Taller than you.
You seem so much taller. But honestly, it was so cool watching you do that as well, because you made it. That was not the first animal you landed, was it?
That was the second one.
Okay, that's still super impressive, because honestly, watching you, like, you made it, you looked like a natural. Like, it definitely looked like you knew what you were doing, that you felt comfortable with what you were doing. And obviously, the staff was right there, like, also walking you through it if you didn't know. But, like, to me, from the outside, I didn't know that that was your second animal. You made that look much easier than your second animal that you had ever landed.
Hooray! It was so much fun, and I literally could not stop smiling after. And so I landed it, right? Which, to finish what I'm saying, is you reel the shark all the way in, right, with this yo-yo in your hand. And when you get them close to the platform, you have to line them up. And what I mean is you kind of line them up so you can pull them onto the side of the platform so that their whole body is sitting on the platform instead of just in the water. And so what this looks like is reeling that line in as close as you can get it and then physically using the current, using how the boat's maneuvering to pull this shark up onto the platform. And I honestly don't even think I remember landing it because I was so much adrenaline and I was like so excited and focused that I just pulled it on. And then that was when you were going to draw blood. And so I went back to make sure that everything was good with blood. And you drew it and I was just like, no way. We just did that together.
We did just do that together. And it was amazing.
It was so awesome.
It was really amazing. And I just like, I honestly, I love that the field school like brought us back together, really. Like they are such an incredible team. They are not sponsoring this podcast. We just genuinely really love them. And they're really
free advertisement. We love them.
They just are like a really safe space to learn how to be a shark ecologist or a shark physiologist or shark, you know, fill in the blank. Like they have a really diverse team of founders. There's five of them. They all have really different backgrounds and experiences. And to learn from them is just like such an incredible opportunity. And I'm so grateful that I had the opportunity to go learn from them. It was awesome. And to be able to work with you again was just like, I mean, like cherry on top doesn't, that's like such an understatement. Like that was just like,
I know.
The fact that all of our worlds collided for that trip was amazing. It was amazing.
It was so much fun. And we have photos together, which I cannot wait to see.
I haven't seen them yet. Yeah.
We don't have any photos together. And I wish that we had one from when I volunteered for you so we could do like a how it was, how it's going photo, but we don't have one.
We don't. I don't usually take pictures with volunteers just for like obvious reasons.
I wouldn't either. I wouldn't ask you to take a picture with me.
I think if a volunteer asked to take a photo with me, I would, but I definitely don't take pictures of my volunteers unless there's like a good reason. Although recently I've gone out of my way to get pictures for my volunteers of them in a professional setting because that obviously can be advantageous, but I wasn't quite so savvy at the time when you were there. Oh, but it was so cool. I also got to learn to finish answering that original question from Man Crush Maya. I also had the opportunity to learn sutures, not on a live animal, but on a suture kit with Christian Pankow, who's another one of the founders who has really awesome experience being able to do sutures on sharks for telemetry work. And telemetry is when you use like acoustic tags and you actually have to implant one of those acoustic tags inside the stomach cavity of the shark. And obviously that requires a very small incision. It's only about an inch or maybe up to 2 inches wide. But because that's obviously problematic to have a 2-inch stomach gap into their stomach cavity, you need to suture that back up. So Christian was really kind to teach me how to do that, which I will hopefully be applying to my work if I get the funding to do telemetry work with the juvenile seven-gill sharks in San Francisco Bay. But yeah, that was, I learned so much and we went out. I also got to learn drumlining. I hadn't ever done drumlining before as a fishing technique. I've done long lining and hook and line. A lot of the research that I do is hook and line, which is when you literally just have like a rod and reel and you drop a weight down to the bottom that has bait on it. But drum lines were super cool and something I'd never tried.
Favorite fishing technique.
It's so cool. You had said that was your favorite, and when I first saw it, I was like, okay, I don't really get it. And then when we did it, I was like, okay, I get it. Like,
it's a lot of fun.
Amani, could you maybe explain what drumlining is? Because I feel like you have more experience with that and might be able to describe it a little better.
Yeah. Okay, so I kind of already explained what the reel is. So we'll just start with that, right? So we have that 100-foot of fishing line monofilament attached, basically. There's to two things. On one side, there's a hook. We use circle hooks. The difference between a circle hook and a J hook is a J hook literally looks like the letter J. And a circle hook, the hook part actually circles inside of itself. So if an animal were to swallow it, the idea is that it won't get caught on things inside their body because there's no sharp edge of that hook sitting anywhere. So that's attached to one side of this mono. And on the other side of the 100 feet, the mono is attached to the drum, which is where you get the term drum lining. And drum is just a fancy word for weight. So what we use are piling caps that are filled with cement. They're about 40 pounds and they sit on the seafloor. So if you're doing this in 15 feet of water, then that drum is sitting on the seafloor of that 15 feet of water. If you're doing it in 80 feet, same concept. It is 80 feet from the surface down. So then with the drum and the mono and the hook, that is then attached to some line that goes all the way up to the surface, which is attached to buoys so that you can find the drum. This helps you, one, see that it's in the same location in case, say, a shark starts dragging it, which has happened. Great hammerheads have absolutely dragged this 40-pound weight with the hook in their mouth, just, like, casually keeping swimming and just dragging it. So it's useful for that because you can see where you put it, and then you can see where it's moving, but also just to be able to haul this drum up. So what we did with Megan was pretty shallow drums. I think we did it in probably between 10 and 15 feet of water. We've also done it in between 70 and 80 feet of water. So when you haul these up, you're hauling the buoys in first, and then you're pulling all of that line 80 feet with the 40-pound drum on it. So it's a lot, like, it's a workout, but it's really fun. And you, like, pull the drum up from however many feet, and then you have to reel in the shark if it's on the line. Sometimes you just reel in bait. Sometimes you reel in an empty hook because someone got a free lunch. And sometimes then you have to reel in 100 feet of mono that has a line attached.
Oh, man. And we did. We got some really cool animals from that. That's where the bull shark came from, was one of the drum lines. And you tend to get larger animals from that, right? Because you use, I mean, larger equipment. But also you sometimes put, correct me if I'm wrong, you often put the drums in locations where you would expect to see the adults as well, some of the larger animals.
Yeah, you're also, if we're using larger bait, normally a shark would likely not go after something that is like larger than its mouth ratio, especially if it's small. However, Atlantic sharp noses have a tendency to just eat whatever is in front of their face.
Oh my gosh.
And we have absolutely pulled them in where the piece of bait is larger than their mouth, and they're just like chomping on the bait, and the hook might not even be set in their mouth.
Okay, listen. This brings up a field story for me really quick that I'm going to tell.
Yes.
Because I feel like a lot of sharks do that. They just nibble on it because, like, I mean, that makes sense. Like, if sharks are opportunistic. If they see something that's bigger than their head, they're going to try to chew on it. For my research, I'm trying to target especially the juvenile seven-gill sharks because those have really not been researched. The one size class I don't have barely any to, like, I have zero samples of seven gills below 50 centimeters. And supposedly when they're born at like 42 to 45 centimeters. So I'm missing like the fresh newborns. There was one time recently, like a month ago, like right when I got back from field school and we were out on the boat, we were in the pupping ground where we see lots of like all the small guys, but not any of like the freshly popped animals yet. Like we know that they're there. We're just like not always getting them except this one time. And we pull up the bait, which is too big for like a 42 centimeter pup. And I literally see the smallest seven gill I have ever seen in my whole career. There's no way it was more than 45 centimeters. It was so teeny tiny.
Oh my goodness.
I could have just like picked it up in the palm of my hand. It was so tiny. And it was not on the hook. It was just holding on.
Chomping
the bait and holding on. And I was like, someone grab the net, because it wasn't on the hook. Yeah. And I was like, let's net it. Get it. And then like, yeah. Because we were all, like, it was just, it all happened so fast. By the time someone grabbed the net, came over, and it had popped off because it was at the surface. Oh, so obviously, yeah, it's going to pop off. And I just sat there, and I, like, literally sat down, and I was just like, that was, like,
so close.
So close
yet so far.
So close. I was finally going to get that sample, and I didn't. Ugh. So, yeah, that definitely happens. But drumlines were so cool.
It does. They were. And you also got to see large nurse shark rage, which I've talked about so much, and you finally got to see it in person.
I was laughing hysterically. The first animal that we landed from a drumline set was a very large nurse shark. And I just look at all of you, like all of you being you and the founders, the staff, and all of you are just like... like, take a deep breath.
We're in for it.
And I was just like, what? Like, Imani has told me about this. She has told me how difficult nurse sharks can be. And then I just, like, see you guys trying to deal with this nurse shark that just, like, it's so impressive because they sit on the bottom of the ocean and they use their pectoral fins to, like, kind of like pseudo walk on the bottom of the ocean, but also like push off of things. They can really use, they have a ton of control of their pectoral fins. And watching that animal just like push off the platform and try to just like bust you guys off, I get it. I get the nurse shark rage now. And it, like, I understand that that was probably a really big pain to deal with when you're trying to take actual scientific data. It was hilarious to watch.
It's hilarious. Literally what goes through your head when you get a nurse shark is, one, we like to say, I shouldn't say we, I like to say that they just sit on the floor building up rage against us for like when we catch them so they can just be upset and use all of the energy they've been conserving to be mad at us. And like, sometimes it's fine. Sometimes we pull them on and you're prepared for it. You know they're going to push against you. You know they're going to try to roll, right? Because they, like, will completely roll over. Like, imagine a dog rolling over. They can do that. They can literally push themselves into that position if they want to. And when they're large enough, they're stronger than, like, all of us. They're all muscle.
Yeah.
And it's, oh,
and they're
my gosh,
way bigger than us, like, too. I mean, like, that nurse shark was probably, I don't know, 8 or 9 feet long. And just, like, very muscular. And very... more experienced than us at like getting out of that kind of situation.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah. They're all of their rage just goes towards trying to push us away.
Yeah. But you guys did
not have weight on top.
I mean, it was also, okay, as funny as it was, because I understood how frustrated you guys were. And maybe it's not appropriate that I was laughing, but it was kind of funny. But like, it was also really impressive because it showed how well you guys worked as a team and how well you communicated when this animal was doing things like the animal was trying to trick you, right? And do something that you weren't ready for, weren't expecting, and how well all of you responded and how well you all communicated really clearly together and like actually very safely handled that animal. And when I say safely, I mean for the animal, it was as safe as that possibly could have been, and for the staff. The staff was safe the entire time. They're making sure that the animal is also safe. They don't want to restrain it in a way that could potentially harm it. And that was very clear with how you were all communicating and making sure that things went as smoothly as possible.
Yeah. They're still one of my favorite sharks. No matter how much I talk about hating nurse sharks and their rage, I love them. Shout out to you, nurse sharks. You guys are fun.
Their dermal denticles, speaking of which I know Imani loves dermal denticles. I think their dermal denticles might be one of the prettiest I've really seen up close.
Yeah.
They're huge, really cool. And they're not like the shape I expected. And they're really like speckly and colorful. They looked like a stone, like a sandstone, but like, I feel like sandstone doesn't even really do it justice. It's just
maybe like marble.
Marble.
Like an old 80s marble countertop.
Something like that. Just like, it was just so pretty. They're really cool.
Yeah. They have really cool denticles. And I like that you can see them, because on a lot of sharks, you can see their skin, but you cannot see the shapes of the denticles. But if you look at a nurse shark up close, you can totally see the shapes of their denticles and the cool colors that they have.
Yeah. They're really pretty. Okay, we have another listener question from our Sharky with handle It's Bro to You on Instagram. And they asked, what's daily life like at field school? What was the hardest thing you had to overcome there? So I think those are both really good questions. Thank you, It's Bro to You. So first, let's talk about what daily life looks like at field school, because that's a great question. And actually, I've heard you talk a lot about field school. I actually had no idea really what to expect until I was there. So maybe I'll start with like my experience kind of as like a new person, and then you can kind of add on. So coming onto the boat, I mean, first of all, I'm from the West Coast, and my entire professional career has been in cold water from either Washington, Oregon, or California on the West Coast of the United States. And going into Miami was really different. I don't even know if I told you this, Imani. I might have, but when I was flying in, I don't think that I'm mistaken here. I am pretty sure I saw an adult whale with a baby whale, like, swimming offshore as my plane was coming in to land off the coast of Miami. Cool. And I looked down and I was like, what is this?
No way.
It's just like a mother and calf whale. And then the diversity there is incredible. It's just like this tropical place, obviously, but the diversity, I mean, immediately, even just in the marina, is incredible. So that was just something I saw right off the bat that I just found impressive. But daily life, you get there, we're living on the boat, right? So we live on the RV Garvin. RV stands for research vessel, which is the field school research vessel. And it depends on what the goal is that day. So if we... Sometimes we set out, or the field school will set out a long line or a drum line dependent on the time of day. So if it's a dawn long line, that means that we're up very early. I think, I don't know, maybe 6 o'clock was the earliest that we got up. I could be wrong about that. And we went out there before the sun was up. And we're setting the lines because you can get different types of activity depending on the time of day. So a lot of times you're up, you're eating breakfast, and then you're getting ready to work. The students that are visiting at the field school are active working students. They are expected to participate in the duties of the boat. And I don't know how much I guess is expected, but our team was actually really collaborative. I was really super grateful for the student team that we had because we all wanted to participate. So we were all ready to scrub the deck. We were all ready to like set the bait on the hooks. We were ready to get down and dirty because that's really what field work is. It's not this like luxury experience. You are like getting grimy. You're getting salt water all over you. Sometimes it's really hot. I think the first couple days there, it was like 95 degrees with humidity, which my cold weather West Coast body was not ready for at all. And you're working through that. And then, of course, you have breaks like lunch break. A lot of times we took a lunch break while, like, if we had a long line set out and we were letting it soak. You call it soak time when you set out a drum line or a long line, and you call it soak time when you are letting it sit in the water and you're waiting to go collect all that field equipment back up. And during that soak time is when you can take breaks. If you need to run to the restroom, you need to eat something, we would take our lunch breaks during a soak time. But then you're pretty much doing that all day. You're fishing all day and you're collecting the samples that you need. And the field school will facilitate different research projects off their vessel. So sometimes we would collect different samples. But when I was there, we collected muscle biopsies and blood and fin clips, morphometric data, which is when you measure the animal at different lengths from their nose to the tip of their tail, or the nose to like the fork, that like point divot in their tail, and also the pre-caudal length, which is like that spot right before the caudal fin starts, and their girth, because that can be really important too, especially if you want to know the health of the animal. Knowing their girth to length ratio can be really important. So those were some of the samples that we were taking, and we were taking those all day, every day, and with different fishing techniques. And as a student, we were learning different field techniques each day. So the field school staff had set out, okay, today we're learning long lining. Today we're learning drum lining. And then we would also learn how to process those samples, how to collect them safely. There was a lot of training for that. I had been fortunate to have a lot of that experience before I got there, but a lot of students had never touched a shark. So we were all learning, you know, how do you properly handle a shark? How do you take that sample safely for yourself and for the animal? And getting trained up just basically on taking all those samples with the blood, we were learning how to process that blood and also how to clean up afterwards. You know, after you're done with everything, the boat doesn't clean itself. You have to get it ready for the next day of field work. And so we were just doing that all day, every day. And then at night, we actually did port back at the dock in Miami, which actually was kind of nice. I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting to be offshore all the time. But it was kind of nice to be back at shore and use the really nice Miami harbor facilities.
Yeah.
fancy. It was really fancy, actually. In terms of field work, that was
Oh, totally.
That was really fancy. Yeah. Okay, what did I miss, Imani? What is day-to-day life like out there that I missed?
I mean, I think you covered all the fishing kinds of things. I would say, you know, every morning breakfast is usually ready between 8 and 9 a.m. And basically what's expected is that you will be ready to eat breakfast and then a half hour after breakfast, ready to be off dock to go start fishing and put lines in the water. So usually people end up going to bed kind of between 10 and 11, I would say, is when people usually opt to kind of go to bed, fall asleep. Towards the end of the week, people will get really tired from being out in the sun, and so they'll opt to go to bed earlier, which I definitely do. So you eat breakfast, and then we kind of get off dock, and then depending on the day, we're doing different fishing techniques, we're talking about different skills, and then we come back, dinner is served. Usually there's like a lecture on things like shark biology or ecology or kind of the history and evolution of sharks. And then we just start over the next day. And it's honestly a lot of fun. We fish every single day, whether we're catching things or not.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things that people have a tendency to think is that we're just catching sharks constantly all the time, which is very not true. I have gone days without catching a shark, and that was not for lack of effort and putting hooks in the water. So we will keep fishing if it is raining, if it is sunny. We have fished when it was thundering and had to like put everyone inside so that we could haul things.
Yeah, that happened when I was there.
Yeah.
Which actually, can I just explain that experience really quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that was amazing. Okay, so that was one of the other things. Yeah, typically we were expected to go out every day, but we had a tropical storm. Was it Tropical Storm Fred? Is Fred...
Something
yeah. like that was going to hit us. Thankfully, it mostly dissipated, except one night we were long lining, which is just what it sounds like. It's this long monofilament line that has lots of hooks like coming off of it that you let soak for about an hour. And Tropical Storm Fred hit. And the staff is like, okay, students are going to go inside and sit because, you know, we were safe for sure, but it was absolutely dumping rain. And so Imani with the rest of the field school staff went out there to pull up all those lines. And I actually took a little video that I will send to you because I don't think I have. But it's like the field school staff like with full rain gear on and there's like lightning in the background and they're just like getting absolutely like if somebody was like dumping buckets of water on them as they're like reeling all of these lines in. And again, was really impressive because, you know, as students, we were learning how to work together and a lot of people are learning how to longline for the first time. And so we're not necessarily the most efficient or quick at like doing these things, at reeling things in, but the field school staff clearly knew what they were doing and just like reeled it in so fast. And it was impressive. All of the students sat in the cabin and like opened up the curtains so that we could see the staff at the bow of the boat, which is the front of the boat. And just like watched in awe at all of these ecologists just like working together really efficiently to get this line in. It weirdly felt like an episode out of, or like the intro out of Gilligan's Island when,
oh my gosh,
when the boat like is hitting a storm. It felt like that, except safer.
Yeah. Yeah, so when you come on Garvin, you are expected to do field work, rain or shine.
Yep.
Obviously not putting any students in any sort of dangerous scenario, but we have done research on days when it has rained all day.
Yeah.
And we've done research when it has been 95 degrees with zero wind all day.
Oh, I would take the rain day any day.
Oh, absolutely. The days that are really hot is you drink more water than you think you are capable of drinking.
Yeah, that is facts. I don't think my body knew how to hydrate, honestly, as much as I was trying to hydrate. I, like, drank so much water, and my body was like, I don't know what to do with all this, and I still got dehydrated.
Yep, yeah. It's a lot to do it in heat versus cold or even just, like, pretty average temperatures.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say that's a general summary of a day in the life on Garvin.
Yeah, I think that was a good summary.
I'm biased, but I had a really good time the first time that I went, and I kept going back, and I still think it's fun.
It's incredibly rewarding. I mean, that's why we're here, right? It doesn't matter, rain or shine, what the day is like. out there in the field. The point is the data. The point is getting to ask these really great research questions and being the person to start to find out the answer. And honestly, finding those answers, it doesn't matter if it's rain or shine. You want to be out there answering that question. So we were out there learning and getting all the data. It was great.
It was so much fun.
So the other thing that this listener asked was, what is the hardest thing you had to overcome at field school?
Oh my goodness. Honestly, I think just how exhausted I was at the end of the summer.
Oh, yeah.
Because we did...
Well, you were doing it constantly.
Constantly. So I went and taught this course. I was the onboard staff member, so I slept on the boat with all of the students.
And made all of our breakfasts.
And made breakfast and cleaned dishes and all of the other staff duties on top of that. I did that for 2 weeks every month from May to August. And Champion. Towards the end, it was 4 weeks in a row because the 2 weeks in July were at the end of July. And the 2 weeks in August were at the beginning of August. And somewhere in between July and August, my body was like, dude, I am so tired. Like, how am I supposed to keep going? And one of the last dawn longlining days, I think, was the most tired that I think I've ever been.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, needing to function, but also being so tired.
I believe
it. There's, like, the hour, there's an hour soak time from when we put the last hook in to when we take it out. And soak time, I mean literally just, like, them being in the water. And we set that at an hour. And usually dawn sets, the first hour is when people will eat breakfast because we get off the dock at, like, 4:35 and we put the hooks in and then there's an hour soak time and we usually haul around 6:15, 6:30. And most people will, like, eat breakfast. I, like, passed out into the deepest sleep of my life in that hour. I think I died. I was, like, gone. There was nobody home for that hour. I was so tired.
I did wonder where you went. Oh, my gosh.
And then the last week, I was just, like, I mean, I was having so much fun because it was so rewarding, and I love teaching students, and I love seeing their skills progress just, like, in the week that they're out on Garvin with us. But, oh my gosh, I was so tired. When I got home, I think I probably slept for, like, 14 or 15 hours.
I believe that. I don't know if I had to really overcome anything while I was out there, to be honest, because I was only there for, what, 8 days? And so for me, I think all of it was just too new to really have any sort of major challenge I had to overcome. And the other thing was, we really had an incredible group of students. You know, the students sign up to go do this course, and I was a student, and being with the other students, I didn't know who was going to be there or what to expect, but I was so grateful with the people that were there. I think we all prioritized working together and working well together, and so truly the whole week was very rewarding. And there wasn't really any big issue or anything that we had to overcome. And I wasn't there long enough to be as exhausted as you were. I think actually, that's how I feel when I'm at my work back on the West Coast. I'm like constantly exhausted. I think I just have more things to overcome on my day to day. But when I was at field school, it was just really great to have an opportunity to learn. And I mean, yeah, I didn't always do things perfectly. No one does, but it was a place where I could learn things in a safe environment where there was no judgment, where I could make mistakes and learn from them and do better. And everyone could. And that was just a really rewarding environment to be in general.
Yeah, I would say that field school is probably one of the most, if not the most welcoming field environment that I have ever been in, with people who really are understanding and just want you to feel comfortable and teach you and will take however long they need to teach you something.
Yeah.
And it's a really good environment to learn a skill that you don't know, because you don't feel rushed. You know that if you mess up, they're not just going to not let you do that thing ever again. Even for me, like, it working with them over the summer, it was so nice to be so comfortable in an environment that I was learning in, which I don't think is something that a lot of people actually get to experience.
Yeah.
Especially with field work. And yeah, I mean, I'm just gonna get all sappy, but like major applause to them. I love them so much.
Yeah, I really do too. And I hope that I can get an opportunity to continue working with them in some capacity. I mean, obviously Dr. McDonald is on my committee, so I'll get an opportunity to work with her. But at the moment I left there, all I could think about was how do I get back and how do I keep working here? Because they're a really great team to work with. Anyway, we love them clearly. We have one more listener question that I want to, you kind of touched on it earlier, but handle Pam Denish on Twitter asked us, what's something each of you learned that surprised you, shark related or otherwise? And so I feel like you kind of touched on it earlier, but she specifically wanted to know if it surprised, what surprised us? Yeah. I think I have something in mind that I can start with. And it's something not necessarily that I learned about at field school, but just that I've learned about in my career is how much we can really learn from each other, everyone, how much we can learn from each stakeholder for a species. I think I have really learned to be much more open-minded than I necessarily was earlier in my career. I think I used to think specifically fishers were just there to get what they needed and didn't necessarily care about the outcome of the population. And I'm grateful to have learned otherwise. And that is something that has surprised me that's why I want to emphasize it so heavily on this podcast is we have so much to learn from fishers and they have so much ecological knowledge about a species and they truly care the most about a fish population. And that might, you know, some scientists out there might be like, no, there's no way I care the most. And it's not a competition, but these fishers are out, this is their living. You know, this is what they rely on to survive and to feed their families. And of course they care about those fish populations and those shark populations. And I think what has surprised me is just the immense amount of knowledge I've been able to learn from fishers. And I continue to learn from them. And yeah, that's been surprising. And I wish it wasn't, honestly. I think I hope that others aren't surprised by that if they listen to this podcast, because there just is so much you can learn from them. Please never assume that based on someone's job description that they, I don't know, just don't make assumptions. We all have a lot to learn here and a lot to offer. And if we're working with a species, there's no way that you don't care about that species. So there's something we can all learn from each other. And that's probably been the biggest takeaway I've had in my career so far.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good kind of way to word it, because I also definitely experienced the same thing, just from what sorts of things you see in the media and then how you view other people. You don't always realize what kind of subconscious biases you create for yourself. And one of the things that I have absolutely learned with field school is just how to think about things and think about stakeholders and think about all the people involved in shark conservation. And then really consider how different policies might be affecting them or how my views of them may have been shifted or changed based on new knowledge versus previous old, mostly outdated knowledge.
Yeah, that's true. And if you're newer and if this is one of the first episodes you're listening to, I definitely encourage you to go back to our shark conservation episode with Dr. McDonald, who is the director of the field school. And I think that you'll walk away with a similar perspective. And I certainly have learned a lot from them as well. And just the people I work with, too. That is my experience working with fishers is they often care the most. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Well, anything else that we haven't gone over?
I don't think so. It was so nice to catch up, though, and also share our super fun fieldwork experience with all the sharkies, because normally they just get to listen to us ask questions about papers, and I feel like this time they got to kind of get more of our personalities because we were actually talking about ourselves.
Yeah, it's true, which we don't do very much because we definitely want to focus on the science, but yeah, sometimes it's good to just catch up.
It is. It's so nice to just talk sometimes.
And we'll definitely put out some more opportunities to submit questions as well. So if you're wanting to submit some questions at some point. If you don't already, follow us on Twitter and follow us on Instagram at SharkpediaPod. And we'll put on our stories or tweet out that day if we're in a place where you can ask questions. We also have a hotline number. We haven't really utilized our hotline number yet. We hope to use it in the future for putting out a paper in advance so you can ask questions about the paper and ask the author it. If that's something that you want to do, we'll definitely start doing that. Definitely let us know. We'd love to hear some feedback from our listeners. But our voicemail number for Sharkpedia is 415-580-2777. So if at any point you want to just like pop in a question that you think of, we get those notifications and we can answer those anytime or in the future. If you want to post some questions about the articles that we're reading before we talk to the author, let us know and we'll definitely start doing that. Also, you're going to start hearing some things about us asking you to rate and review. I know that might sound really weird, but it actually does help us. There's been a lot of people learning about our podcast, which has been super cool. And it does help other people learn about the podcast. If you're willing to rate and review us, that definitely helps so that we can gain more Sharkies. And honestly, I would love to see our Sharkies start talking to each other because all of our Sharkly listeners are like kind of awesome.
I agree. It'd be so fun. Sharky hangout.
Sharky hangout. Wait, what's a group of sharks called? Is this? You know what? We'll just make a shark squad. I don't know. I can't remember at the top of my head what a group of sharks is called. But we're gonna make a Sharky squad. It's gonna happen.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys for catching up with us this week. It's been awesome.
So much fun. I can't wait for our next episode to come out. We're gonna be reaching out to some cool authors to talk about some really awesome papers. And
yes.
Again, for people listening, especially if you know someone who has first author papers or you have papers yourself that are about sharks, please, please, please submit that into our Google form on our Twitter and Instagram bios because we would love to email you. And while Megan and I spend a lot of time looking at papers, emailing people, we cannot find all of the papers that are out there. So if you have a paper that you really like, even if you didn't author it, feel free to submit it so that we can find the author who wrote it and reach out to them and maybe talk about a paper that you're really interested in.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. All right, Sharkies, thank you so much again. And until next time,
swim you later.
This episode was edited by Kayla Shue.